Hey beautiful people, and welcome to a brand new episode of A Slice of Life with me, Jack Walton. Be sure to subscribe on both iTunes and Spotify, and follow me on social media, I am Jack Walton, to keep updated with new monthly episodes. Hey everyone, I am back. Oh my goodness, I have been so excited for this moment. It's now 2020, it's January, so happy new year everyone. I promised you guys in August that I would try my absolute best to bring it back for season two, and we are here, it's back. I'm so excited. This season, guys, you are in for such a treat. We've got really big, interesting guests. Guys, trust me, you are really going to enjoy this. And yeah, without further ado, I want to welcome this month's guest, season two, episode one. This is somebody who I have met through Instagram, through online, and yeah, he's got a very, very interesting story to tell. So without further ado, this is Billy Paul Hardin.
Hi guys, how you doing, Jack?
Billy, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, mate. I'm really excited about taking part in this podcast. I can't wait to tell my story and let guys know what I'm doing at the moment.
Amazing. So this is your first podcast, isn't it?
Yes, my debut.
I love that. And guys, like, Billy is very dedicated. Obviously, this podcast is recorded in Birmingham. Billy, you've come all the way from...
Surrey.
Is it from Surrey?
Surrey.
That's interesting. I didn't realise that's where you come from. I thought London, so Surrey is quite a way, isn't it?
It's just outside London, so zone six, so suburbs.
Joe and I think of Surrey.
Yeah.
I feel like it's quite posh.
No. It's not posh. I come originally from a place called Mitcham in Surrey, which is near Croydon. And
do you?
It's more of a South London vibe than it is
so
Surrey.
Croydon, did you say?
Yeah, that way,
so
yeah.
That's what I've heard of. I thought, okay, so Croydon, Surrey, okay. Okay. Yeah. So quite a journey. So... I don't want to speak too much right now. I want kind of you to hear a little bit about you. So I always ask, tell me how you got to be on this podcast today. Like, what's your story? Billy, who are you?
Well, basically, my journey has been one of a journey of healing from trauma, really. I've been through a lot of traumatic experiences in my life. It started basically when I was 19 years old. I had a bit of a tough experience in Mali. I had a couple of seizures out of the blue just from drinking lots of alcohol, you know.
Yeah.
I was doing the typical laddish thing. They're 19 years old, and anybody who knows what Mali is like, it's a wild place.
It's very,
you know,
wild and party, isn't it?
It's very wild and party. And I think I was 19 years old, and I'm 35. Then I didn't
19
really,
yeah.
So I didn't really care about my body. I was just drinking, thinking,
of course not.
Who cares about water? You know, who needs H2O in their life? You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Eating's cheating and all that. So I was living it wild.
So that's in relation to that, really quickly. Yeah, interestingly, yeah. What I would like to know, because I've done a little bit of research into you, know, I always research each guest. Did you experience, like, going straight into it, did you experience anything prior to the event when you're 19 in terms of the panic attacks? I remember thinking, was there anything before that, mental health wise, like anxiety, or even if it was just a bit of like panic? Do you know what I mean?
I was a bit of a worrier.
Okay.
Which was because of my childhood, but it seemed to come out later on in life. So it was like, it seemed to be that experience of Malia seems to be a trigger for all this stuff going on previously.
Right.
And then
right.
It built up. So I was always a bit of a worrier. I was a nervous person, scared to be around guys, alpha males, and that. I was really quite shy in that, you know. And I think I definitely was that type of person that did worry about everything.
Yeah.
And I probably went to Malia and, you know, as a 19-year-old, you just suppress things with drinking. You don't want to face up to what's really going on in your mind or your body. So you drink, you know, you drink.
And that's an interesting one, because from my experience, I find that alcohol can be very anxiety inducing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
When I sometimes drink alcohol, it can make me feel very anxious, especially the last few times. And I'm like, I'm not really. It's interesting because I think it can make things worse. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense totally. I mean,
because I suppose it is like a depressant, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't think people realise sometimes that they're drinking or they're taking drugs or whatever, and then they get away from their problems for 5 minutes. Literally, that's how I see it. You get away from that kind of, it's a buzz. You get away from your problems, from your demons, but then you wake up the next day,
it's
and they come back,
isn't it?
And they come back like twice as bigger, twice as uglier than demons. And you feel like you could end up making yourself feel even more suicidal than you was previously. But
because
it is escapism,
drinking,
yeah.
I was speaking to a friend who suffers very badly with mental health not long ago, and she said, I saw a thing on social media saying she wanted to get drunk and to drink alcohol, and I'd message her saying, I don't, you know, I'm your friend, I don't think that's a good idea, because although, as she said, I don't want to be here right now, I don't want to be somewhere else, I just think actually, and she did say after, it did make her anxiety worse. And I was like, yeah, it's interesting. Although people do it and they think, oh, getting drunk, it's fine, it's a nice happy state to be in. I think it can actually be about who you are as a person, because you could be like that, but some people drink, get drunk, and then in them being drunk, it can make them feel 10 times worse.
Yeah.
So I think it is different for each person. Yes, it can make people very like happy and very kind of like, you know, everything's all good and chilled. But actually, I do know people, including myself, where it can make you go the other way.
Yeah.
Like emotional. So I suppose that makes sense why the panic attacks happened in Mali, because there was a lot of excessive drinking, wasn't there?
Yeah. And that's what led to the seizures happening.
So actual seizures, right?
It was like watching. So I was sitting, really? I went up to my room for a rest and.
Yeah.
My hand started to go slow motion and my body just shut down and my hand spasmed.
Oh,
it went into
God.
A ball, and I was watching my body go into this kind of seizure, and I passed out because my body contorted so much it couldn't contort anymore. That's how it felt. And so I woke up from the first time it happened, and actually I didn't care. I carried on drinking. I thought, oh, it doesn't matter. This is a weird experience.
Yeah.
But I'm fine. It happened 3 days later. Not a surprise really, because I carried on drinking. Didn't listen to my body telling me to drink some water.
Exactly. So you carried on. So it just snowballed, got bigger. That makes sense.
Yeah.
There was alarm bells there.
Yes.
Saying, isn't it interesting when you're in the moment, I know from past experience, you don't see the alarm bell. You don't see all the red flags everywhere. It's like you're blind to it. And then after you're like, oh my God, actually, those were signals for me to number one, stop. Number two, change. Number three, take note of what I'm doing. It's interesting. A lot of the time we don't see it, do we? It's after. We were talking on the journey here, weren't we, about reflection and how actually reflection for anyone with mental health is very useful, isn't it?
Yes, 100%.
Very useful. Like, how's reflection kind of, how has that not helped you, but how has that kind of assisted you in your journey?
Well, reflecting back and looking back.
Yeah. Has it been useful or not? Because I think for me, like I said before, my journey, before I was like, when I used to suffer and stuff years ago, I was always reflecting in the wrong way, as in I was always looking at the stuff that was negative and looking at it in a way it was making me feel worse still. And I always kind of looked at the stuff that I hadn't achieved and like, oh, Jack, look what you haven't done. And just making myself like beating myself up. But now I reflect in, I try to do it in a positive way. Doesn't make sense?
It makes sense perfectly.
So like, how's reflection used for you?
That's a similar experience for me, really, reflection. And I sometimes, me taking time out to myself and being on myself in my own mind, it can help. But sometimes it can be a bad thing.
Because your mind can be, do you know what I mean? It can either be one side or the other. So actually, I suppose there must be times where you don't want to do it.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying to you. When I'm on my own sometimes, it doesn't help. So for me, reflection sometimes is a good thing to go into counselling, see my counsellor. I don't really see him as much anymore because I've learned to become independent. I've taught myself.
You've got mechanisms, right?
Yeah,
I've got mechanisms. Like a toolbox. Like, I almost have like a mental health. I don't know about you, but I have a mental health toolbox. So in my toolbox, there's like a lot of my mindfulness stuff and my meditation and all that kind of thing. And I always say that every single person's toolbox will be different. So yours is probably totally different to mine, but it is crucial, isn't it, to have a little, I say toolbox, it's literally just stuff that I know I can do to get to a calm, I would say a centered level. So I don't know how you look at emotions, but for me, I strive to be centered a lot of the time. It's really good to be very excited and up here. I love that, but I'm very well aware when I'm like that, I need to be centered again in a minute. Mm. If it's for too long, I need to be centered. If you're down here and I'm low, we need to get back up to being centered. Centered to me is just, it's almost like the neutral. So I always see like a pendulum swinging. That's what I've always had in my head. So up here and then there's up there and then in the middle we're just centered and we're nice and easy. That for me is when I'm at my most kind of calm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So like, what do you have in your mental health toolbox? Do you have certain things that you know, okay, I can go and do this today and it's going to help me?
For me, that is, with me and my trauma issues, I find it hard to meditate. So
yeah,
I think it's what works for everybody personally. What their toolbox is very different.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, and what works for me is very, I have to do activity-based things, like primal screaming, like shouting, and like going to boxing and training and hitting
screaming.
A punch bag.
Screaming. And interestingly, I was reading a book at the moment called The Power Within You by Louise Hay.
Yeah.
I read her first book, How to Heal Your Life. The second one is The Power Within You. In terms of anger, and getting stuff out, the best thing she recommends is to punch and scream into like a big pillow, like a bed pillow, like scream into it, punch it. She's like, I do this like every single week, and she even does it when she's not angry. So all the time, doing that and like screaming, actually, according to her and according to loads of research, is actually really useful. I found that really interesting. I thought, ah. And it's not actually when you're angry, you can do it anytime, and apparently it's very useful. So that kind of maybe in relation to...
Yeah, that literally is the same thing. If I'm indoors and I don't have access, obviously, I can't get to the gym, to the boxing gym.
Because exercise is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So that helps me to kind of, even if my missus has seen me sometimes and just come in the room and I'm punching her like yoga pillow thing. Yeah, because I just use anything like a bean bag, whatever I've got.
Like a cushion.
I just try to... I found what kind of works for me, and I found something recently which is quite strange for me to talk about this experience, but it's profound for me.
Talk about it, it's totally awesome.
I've noticed things like light language lately. I don't know if you know anything about light language.
Tell me about that, because I really love learning new things.
I'm trying to learn about it, so I still don't understand it, but it's a basic different language in this.
Really?
People speak in this. It's you type it in YouTube and you'll see what
light
I mean.
But language.
But I've tried to express my way in this, express my emotions in this way. By just being free. So if I'm sitting indoors and I'm feeling triggered by my traumas, because I said, slowing down and meditating for me can be problematic.
I suppose the way I look at it with that, I guess it almost bubbles up to the surface.
Yes.
If that stillness for you maybe is going to result in it coming up. And obviously that's not a good thing. So I guess that's why this sort of proactive kind of stuff is very useful to you, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it really is. To look at these other things, there's so many.
We have so much.
So much knowledge out there.
We're really lucky, aren't we?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have things like YouTube, etc.
I really do. I feel that, again, we'll probably talk about this more in depth. But in terms of like mental health and what we have now, I'm so grateful we have all this stuff. Like we have all these resources and all these. There's something for everyone. If you don't go down the mindfulness route, there's something else. If you don't do the spirituality route, there's something else. There's all these. You know, there's gyms and stuff now where they're talking about mental health in gyms, and it's like I see all this different stuff, and it's all towards this one common goal, which is literally to help people feel good mentally, physically. And I just think it's great, because you know, when I was 13, so in 2010, when I was diagnosed with PTSD, there was none of this. It was just counseling. There was none of this stuff. I didn't have social media. I didn't have access to anything, really. And if I would have done, I'd have been like, okay, so I'm not alone then. The only thing I knew about PTSD is I thought it was something soldiers got. Mm. That's the only thing I had in my mind. So having that in my mind did not help, because I thought, does that mean what I've been through isn't valid then? Because I haven't been to, you know, a war-torn country and, you know, been involved in a huge thing like that. But at the same time, this stuff to me does feel very damaging and big. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I think I myself, from my perspective, I've found that I've fallen into that trap as well, about thinking that
it's valid.
That I'm not validated for the things I've been through, because sometimes I think it's part of our journey to feel guilty, or some of us to feel guilty or feel ashamed about what we've been through, and think that actually
we shouldn't be feeling this way about it, because
somebody's been through much worse than me.
I always used to do that, and actually, when I used to do that, it wasn't helpful, because then it would be like a conflict up in my mind, and that wouldn't be a helpful thing. I want to point out to people listening, so I spoke last season about my mental health stuff and PTSD and anxiety. So I've got Billy on for one reason, and that's because we've shared similar kind of... So you've got... It's not PTSD. I believe it's CPTSD. Is that right?
Yes, complex PTSD, yeah.
So do you... Have I told you about my stuff or not?
No, not really.
Maybe I should. So obviously, guys, I've told you about it in... The episode with Vic when I talk about mental health. So two things happened in very quick succession. So it was 2010, and one thing happened in the summer, one thing happened at Christmas, just before. So in the July, my house was broken into. It was like quite a traumatic robbery. Then in the December, my nan died. But she wasn't a nan, she was like a second mum. So she was I saw her 6 days a week. She was a very big figure. So both things happened very quick succession. In the January, so a month after, I just think, like, it's like a mental bomb went off and everything just went all these different ways. And at the time, I thought I had OCD, because I had very compulsive habits of, I had to check locks 100 times, and if there was any noise in the house, I'd like shoot up straight away. Like, I was always on a knife edge and I could never relax. And so I thought, okay, I've got OCD. Went to the doctor. They said, no, you've actually got PTSD. And I was like, oh my God. They said, you've got PTSD, you've got anxiety. The anxiety wasn't a shock, because prior to that, after being bullied at high school, I knew I had anxiety and nerves. But the PTSD was a very weird thing to deal with at 13 years old, because obviously you're very young, aren't you, then?
Yeah.
So that's my story of PTSD, and that is something that I'm very open about, because, again, those two things happening, there's people in my family who weren't affected by the first incident where I really was. And yeah, I always used to think after, isn't that interesting? But then I thought, no, it really is, because each person deals with everything differently.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it was that, and then the grief, and it just kind of toppled into PTSD. So I was offered medication, but I just went for the counselling route. And I had counselling through CAMHS, which is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. So I had that, and I think it was like once every 2 weeks. But I was lucky because I had that, and then I also had counselling in school as well. So I had a school counsellor that was for free because it was in school. Then I also had this CAMHS counselling. So both of that together was very helpful. I don't remember a lot from counselling, really. I think a lot of it really was them kind of trying to make me realise that, Jack, what you're thinking right now, it isn't real.
Yeah.
I was always constantly thinking that something bad was going to happen to me or my family or somebody that I cared about. It was always like something bad's going to happen. And it was literally just about kind of the way I saw counselling for me, it was like unpacking all the shopping and putting it on the table. Yep. So the shopping were my thoughts, and then I could see on the table everything for what it was. And it was a very interesting experience because I saw all these thoughts and I was like, whoa, I'm actually thinking this stuff. And to me, it felt real. It did feel, it felt totally and utterly real. So even though they were saying, Jack, this isn't going to happen, to me, I still didn't see that. So that's something that took a very long time to kind of start to shift and to change. And I think I was looking at aspects of it happening when it did at 13, because I was a lot younger. I think that's why I managed to kind of get over it in just a few years, where I know other people where it's been like a lot later and there's been different stuff happen. So I think it is, everyone's different, aren't they? However, saying that, I'd always say that if you are someone who's had PTSD, you're always going to be prone. Does that make sense? Like, I've known the future that things might happen, and I still know that I'm going to be mindful of it. I'm going to be like, Jack, just be mindful of this, because you know what's happened in the past. So yeah, without waffling on too much, that's my little, just so you know.
Yeah,
everyone else knows, but that's my, again, polar opposite to you, but that's what's interesting. That's my journey with PTSD. So if you want to, do you want to go over a little bit about yours more? And I will not interrupt you.
No, it's fine. No, literally after the Mali situation kind of thing, I come back from there and I had a bit of a breakdown, obviously. I had loads of panic attacks and just things really deteriorated. So I got on to medication and antidepressants. They saved me, really.
I was about to say that. So were they useful? Because I always ask people this, because it is different. I've got family members who take antidepressants and they are very useful. So were they useful for you in your...
In that situation, at that time of my life, they saved me.
In a short-term way?
In a short-term way. Yeah. And if I'll explain to you, but that's in that moment then, I think that I needed them. It wasn't a case of wanting. I feel like at that time of my life, I needed them.
Did you feel like you needed them to get through? Like, what was, paint a picture of what, so you're 19, right?
Yeah.
You're 19, you're back in England.
Yeah.
What's day-to-day life like? Tell me about a typical day, just in terms of what was going on, how were you feeling, how were you coping? Obviously, back then, there wasn't a lot of support, was there? So what was happening? What was going on?
Literally just wake up, have a panic attack, calm down from the panic attack, wait for the other one to come, have another panic attack, wait for that to go, have another panic attack.
Really?
Cry my eyes out, because obviously the panic is so scary. Because the thing is with panic attacks, obviously, you know, a lot of people say this, but people can say about, you know, that you're going to, they're not going to kill you, basically. Panic attacks can't kill you. They can't.
It feels like the fear of them. Awful. It doesn't
matter what people are telling you at that time.
No, it doesn't.
You genuinely think you're going to die. So I just thought for two weeks, even in Malia, really? I'm thinking that because that experience, that I'm going to die. I thought when them seizures were happening, that was death. I didn't realise they're just a weird experience. I thought, this is me dying. So my whole mindset now is, I don't want this seizure to happen again, because this is death for me. So I've related it to death. And then,
so because you've related it to death, you're going to do whatever it takes so you are not in that situation again, because that is the worst point and you don't want to be there. So you're going to take the medication. So taking that medication, what did that do? Did it take the edge off? What did it do?
It stopped. So it didn't stop me from being the person I was. So as I said, I've always been an anxious, worried person before that.
Of course.
But it took the panic attacks away.
Did it?
Which was the main protagonist behind everything. It was the thing stopping me from going to work.
It was the thing stopping me from socialising. No.
So it was very difficult for me. So taking that medication helped me to go back to work again. I went and done scaffolding. And I did that for a very long time, and it helped me to kind of, just as I said, be able to go and talk to people again without worrying about panic attacks. Because, you know, you're always thinking in the back of your mind, when are they going to come? When
is it
going
to happen? You know? Especially if you're in public as well, I suppose. Because then, if you're not in your little haven at home, it is a lot. What do you do when, you know, if you're in public, you are very aware that you've only got so many options of escape routes. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's like, what?
I don't know if about you, but I remember when I was really suffering with PTSD symptoms, I couldn't go to like shopping centres. Like, it was too much to deal with in terms of, it was very overwhelming, lights, people. I always just feel very hot. It was never a good place to be. Like now, you know, I do these things daily without thinking, but back then, going to a shop, going to a supermarket was too much to deal with. I remember, like, I just used to stay in all the time. I would not want to leave the house because it would just be exhausting, constantly exhausting. So going to somewhere, like, I remember a local shopping mall, it was like, no, I don't want to go there, because it was all the people as well. I used to be so paranoid about other people all of the time, that what people were thinking. And I always used to think that every single person I came into contact with was judging me. And that was a bit of like a paranoia thing. So that for me was very overwhelming.
How does it feel like when you talk about how far you've come in your journey? Your face looks like it's kind of...
strange.
No, it looks like it's lighting up, as if from you've come from one place to be able to go to a place without thinking about it.
It's interesting talking about that stuff, because that, you know, that was in this... like, I saw something earlier saying, oh, it's, you know, it's an end of a decade soon. Guys, for you listening, it's actually the start of a decade. But this stuff was in 2010, interestingly. 2011, 2010. So it, you know, 9 years ago, but it does feel like a million years ago. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does.
But no... I was totally different in terms of, like, just stuff was... I think when you're going through these things, don't you think everything's an effort? Like, did you ever get tired a lot? Because I was always exhausted all of the time. I was just tired. But then I'd sleep and I'd wake up, and I'd wake up feeling exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, I always remember talking to my mum about this, saying, I've had a full night of sleep, but I still feel incredibly tired. And I felt like that all the time. And I kind of came to the conclusion that although I might have been sleeping in terms of my body, I wasn't sleeping mentally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I think...
it sounds silly, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's like you said, you're fighting mentally. So you've got a battle going in your mind, and people just think, you know, it's physical. So it's not, though. If you're having that battle, then of course you're going to be exhausted. Course, it makes total sense that you're going to wake up and feel tired, because you haven't really rested. You haven't really rested at all, you know, so...
it's totally different. So again, I totally cut you short. Going back to... so. Mally happens.
Yes.
You're back home.
Yeah.
Then medication. So what happens next on the, journey, if you want to call it a journey, the story, your life?
Yeah. I always call it a journey for some reason, but...
yeah, it's true, isn't it?
The next step was I went to Turkey the next year.
Right, so what was that for? Was it just a holiday?
A holiday. So that was just and that was for me going to Turkey. It sounds like a small thing, but I was facing my fear of going abroad.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying. The experience of going back to being on holiday.
Was that
holiday.
Because of being in Mally, you were like... trying to go abroad again.
The sun was a trigger for me. The heat.
Yeah.
The heat became a trigger for me.
Sense.
Which it still is to this day. The sun is a
makes
trigger
sense.
For me.
Like the heat.
So associated with seizure.
When you get hot, again, I've said this when I'm indoors in busy public places around this time of year, when you get hot and you've got a coat on, it's like you can feel a lot more like the pressure and the stress. So I do get the heat actually doesn't help, does it?
No, I've read before that sometimes that can be problematic for people with anxiety, too much sun.
Yeah,
because
that makes sense.
Yeah, but
so you went to Turkey.
I went to Turkey. Then the next year, I went back to Turkey again. So I'm now building up confidence going
did
away.
You have a good. So the first time you went to Turkey, was that positive?
It was positive. I look at it and it was very stressful, full of anticipation and worrying about death. But I was around people really supportive.
Amazing.
They were so supportive to me. So if I had a problem, I said to them, you know, that I was feeling anxious and panicky, they was like, come and talk to us. And I was around good people, and that made a massive difference. And it was a tough experience, but it was a positive, because I come home from there and I gained so much confidence. And that then, Jack, gave me the confidence to go away the next year to Turkey.
Amazing.
And then I come back from that experience, and my friend, by the off chance, rang me and he said, Billy, I've got two tickets here to Malia. Two boys I know have pulled out. And
back to Malia.
Yeah, and then he said, they're selling these tickets on the cheap. So I was like, the fear hit me. I heard of Malia and I was like, wow. But then some inner strength or something told me that I want to go back and face that.
I want to go back
I didn't need to do it, but I wanted to do it. And that was in me. I said, yes, I'm going to go.
It's quite strengthening, kind of. I've got a friend who had similar stuff, and she went back somewhere, and she did say going back there was very emotional, but not in almost a negative way, just a general emotional way in terms of like, I'm back. And it is very strengthening to do that sometimes, depending again on what situation, really. But I guess it's different for everyone. But for you, so you went back to Mali then?
Yeah, I went back there. And
so was it like a lad's holiday this time with loads of alcohol and partying, or was it different?
No, I'll be honest with you, from that experience in the first time in Mali, I learnt my lesson. Even going on the trips to Turkey, I was very conscious of the alcohol I was taking. Every time I did have a drink, I'd replace it with like two cups of water.
Amazing.
So I was conscious. Okay. So I learnt my lesson from that mistake. But I'll be honest, going back to Mali, I walked past the hotel it happened, and it felt so liberating. I felt free because I don't know, maybe it was the medication that helped me, but I walked past it and I didn't have fear. I thought, I'm fine. This experience happened 3 years previously.
It happened.
It's not happening now. Tense. It's gone now. And that, I think I processed that, and going back there helped me to process that traumatic situation. And
so that is a positive.
Oh, that is a massive positive. And I actually enjoyed my holiday. I had a great time. I had a really great experience. So
for a little while then, was life kind of good after that situation in Mali? Was like life better?
Yes. Life was good. Okay. Life was good. I felt free. I think, as I said to you, like, I am an anxious person.
So you're still kind of a natural worrier, right?
Yeah, I think that was below the surface.
But like the heavy, with PTSD, I said the really nasty, horrific symptoms were like easing. When I look at anxiety, and because I had anxiety and PTSD.
Yes.
I almost got to the point where I was like, anxiety is just anxiety to me now. It's like, without, for me, I can say this because it's from my experience, I was like, if I get anxiety, I'm not going to worry as much, because after going through PTSD and what I went through, my God, it does actually make anxiety look a lot less worse, because my symptoms of PTSD were so horrific that nerves from anxiety and the nervous feeling in my stomach actually was like, yeah, I'll take that any day over PTSD, because those symptoms were really horrible for me. So I didn't end up really worrying about the nerves as much after that experience. I thought, God, Jack, if you can go through this stuff and come out the other end, you really can go for anything, because it takes over your whole entire life and your whole mind and your whole everything, and you're thinking things that are just totally nasty, horrible. Like, obviously, guys, it's hard to understand, but literally your thoughts are just really nasty, aren't they? Negative and totally, like, if you heard them, you'd think, whoa, this is not right. And no, it isn't right, but you know, without, you know, it, that is what you kind of go like when you're suffering so much, isn't it? It is a tough one. And you know, we're in our minds all the time. They need to be a nice place to be. When they're not a nice place to live in, that's when the problems can start, can't they?
100%. The mind is, as people know, it's a very powerful thing. And God, I think we've lost kind of...
It's almost like your worst enemy or your best friend. And God, you want it to be your best friend, because it can, as we know, do wonders, do amazing things. But there's the other side. And when stuff takes over, that it can go to a totally different level, can't it?
Yeah,
I guess looking back for you now, you've seen your mind... set mind, mental health, in that place on that end of the spectrum, then on in that place and in the middle. Like, I guess you've seen all different areas, haven't you, because you've had lots of different, you know, varied experiences. So leading on from after that, what is the next, let's say, stage, next step, next whatever happened?
Well, the next step was I come back from there and I decided, now
kind of good then.
It was, this is the thing for me. I can sit here and say it was good, but maybe not. I think further on in my journey, when I explain it, it's that coming back to it, I don't think I was as good as I made out, as in deep down, you know, as
that
in my,
makes sense.
In what was going on really. But at the time, it was just good to be free of panic attacks. That was the main thing at the time, that the antidepressants helped. And going back to Mali, and I didn't have a panic attack in Mali the second time. So I'm thinking, it's been resolved.
That must have felt like such a little victory.
It was empowering, Jack. It was empowerment. And that's given me the confidence then to come back. And I thought, you know, I just thought, I'm ready to go travelling. So I thought, I'm going to save up, work hard, and save up to go travelling to Australia and Thailand, which was my next step on the journey.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So do you want to say what happened in Australia? Because I know what happened. I did some research. Do you want to?
Yeah, I do.
Sure?
I'm sure.
Guys, for everyone listening, I'll put this on the episode, trigger warning. Very traumatic event was witnessed by Billy, and I did a bit of research into it, and even I was like, oh, now I get it, because I didn't know what your situation was. I read up on you on your website and I thought, you're explained. But in my opinion, anybody who witnessed what you witnessed, I feel, would suffer immensely after. That's what I feel. I'm like, wow, okay. So if you want to kind of explain your side of it. And
it's nice actually you're just saying that though, because when you hear someone say that, though,
when I read it, I kind of felt ill.
Yeah.
Because I was like, ah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I would have, yeah. So I can definitely, yeah, I can definitely understand.
Yeah. So going on from that, basically, I got to Australia, went with my friend Alison. We arrived in Melbourne, but she decided that she wanted to stay there because we'd met some friends there who we'd met previously in Ibiza.
Ah, nice.
She stayed there, and I decided that I don't want to stay in one place. I'm here to travel.
You want
to
go?
I want to go and experience this place. I like my own time and being myself and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I took off up the East Coast, booked an excursion, booked a package, hostels and coach trips.
All over kind
of? All over. It was all in one. So wow. I done that. I knew where I was going. And then, cut a long story short, I arrived in a place called Airy Beach, which is where you go to before you travel to Fraser Island.
Wow.
So I was going to go on. Nice. It was like an excursion in these jeeps to go to Fraser Island. So we stayed in Airy Beach in this hostel, and I met up with some Irish guys and these girls. And they said, do you want to join us, Billy? So I joined them. They're really nice people. Had a bit of banter and stuff. And the next day, we took off from the jeeps. And on that first night of being there, we were setting up camp, and we were setting the tent up and cooking food on a fire. I remember me and a couple of the girls cooking.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, I've seen this guy, Mackie, who was with, this Irish guy. He's come running over. There was sand there. And it was like kind of a mound. It's like a hill. So I see him running over this hill, running towards me, looking frantic in his face.
Yeah.
And I'm quite like,
what's wrong?
I'm just thinking, what's wrong? Yeah. What's up with him? He's run straight to me and said, Billy, he said, you're the biggest fella here. He said, some guy, Patrick, this German guy we'd met out there, he was choking on a piece of steak.
Oh my God.
He said, Billy, you're the biggest fella. So he said
terrifying,
that to me.
Yeah.
You know, you need to come and try and save him. My instinct, Jack, just completely took over.
Yeah, because it's that fight. It's like, what? So you just legged it, I'm guessing.
There was not a fault in me. You know, some
you
people
just
say,
go, don't you?
You know, some people explain these situations, and I've noticed with the terrorist attack when a guy tried to look after people recently, tried to save people by intervening. Is that I don't think people, they get labelled as brave and courageous, which they are, but it's instinct.
I understand that.
It's instinct.
You just run, don't you? It's like you do whatever it takes to save anybody, wouldn't you, really?
Well, that's what I'm saying, bro. I'm saying is in, we...
So I get what you're saying.
People say it's brave or courageous to help, try and help someone, and sometimes we label it as people that...
It's almost like, how can you not?
But people label it as backing away from a situation as being cowardly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So someone could have backed away from the situation. The way in the world today, we go, oh, well, they're a coward because they took flight instead of helping.
Yeah.
But I don't think that. I just think it was instinctual with me.
Yeah.
It was instinct, so
something
I just run there, you know?
Something in you to...
Yeah, go. It wasn't brave, it wasn't courageous. I just thought this is what I have to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I literally just run towards, over the mound, and I've just looked up, and there's this guy just wheezing in front of me.
Yeah.
And as you can imagine, the experience, you know, it was watching that guy wheezing and that. And I just ran up to him, and I just started trying to give him the Heimlich manoeuvre. And I've never given, I don't know what the Heimlich manoeuvre, I've seen it in films.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen it in Mrs. Doubtfire. You know?
Yeah.
And I've got that in my image, in my head, I'm thinking.
You just did whatever you, I'm like, I know, I think I know, I'm just going to do whatever I can to try to help this person.
Yeah, and
And
I was doing it, and I'm picturing the piece of meat coming out of his mouth. So I'm being positive, thinking this is going to work.
It's going to fly
out. I was so confident,
out.
And then two girls there were trained paramedics, and they said to me, "What? Do it like this." So they were showing me the technique and getting me to do it. But I think the reason they asked me to do it is that because I was big.
Got
it. They're thinking that my strength will help him.
We'll get it to come out.
Get it. So they showed me a technique. I tried to do it. And it got to the point where he was in so much pain that it just stopped. Nothing was changing.
It wasn't helping.
And so we had to basically, was watching him basically.
How do you call for helping you out in the wherever?
We was on an island. So basically... We had to wait for. This is how bad luck. This was the bad luck we had. Is in the tide was out. The tide was out, and the ambulance from the main town in Fraser Island couldn't get to us, so we had to wait for a helicopter, which took 3 hours.
Well, even half an hour would be too late.
But Jack, in the media, they put it out there that they was there in half an hour. It was about 3 hours. The real story. We know the real story, and the time it took to get took the ambulance helicopter to get there. He was brain dead, so the girls kept him alive.
Because the oxygen's cut off to your brain, so it would be so quick, wouldn't it?
So we had to basically watch him.
He died basically in front of you.
Yeah, basically in front of us, yeah. So it was...
horrific.
It was really horrific, yeah.
So would you say Malia and Australia together were these almost two traumatic times that resulted in what happened after? With me, again, it can be anything, it can be one thing. For me, it was... these two separate things that weren't related to each other. Would you say for you it was the two things? Would you say, looking back, actually, it was the Australia incident that kind of tipped things over? What would you say?
This is something I've found quite profound lately, in that I've realised that going into therapy, dealing with lots of other stuff amongst that stuff in my childhood as well, childhood trauma, is that when I try and look for triggers sometimes, like I've become aware of what's happened to me and all the stuff I've been through.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get triggered by things and I try and search for the answer. So I say, well, what is the root? What is the answer? But sometimes there isn't an answer. And that's where And that's where we get trapped in our mind. So what I've tried to learn to do lately is come into my body. What is my body telling me? Not what my mind's telling me.
That's my body.
My body was telling me what's the truth. It gives you the intuition. Whereas your mind can cloud things sometimes. And you're trying to guess, oh, what was the root? What was the trigger? I've realised this is my perspective, so I don't judge anyone.
I've been
in this circle, but I'm coming to a stage now of my awareness. I'm like, trust your body, Bill. You don't have to get trapped in this confusion.
And you've been on this journey for a long time, so yeah. I didn't ask this. So would you be able to say what year was this in Australia? What year?
Oh, that's really tough. So I reckon the Malia thing was about 2004.
Really that long ago?
So I think
so. Guys, this is a long time, isn't it?
Yes, very long time.
A long time. So, without wanting to skip too much, Australia happens, awful, horrific event. I'm guessing you come home.
Yeah.
Or not.
We had to carry on that experience in that holiday. On Fraser Island, nobody come and got us off that island. And I just want to share something, though, that happened that I think is quite relevant, really, to do with men and mental health. And that's that.
Yeah, share it.
That when it was happening, a Canadian guy we met, Chris, fell on the floor and started praying and was crying, saying, please, Patrick, pull through. And someone else there, a couple of other guys, said, why is he crying for? He doesn't even know the guy. And that my mindset at the time was, I'm a sensitive guy, so I felt like crying myself. But because I've heard this other guy saying that you shouldn't cry, you know, you don't even know him, what are you crying for?
It shut me down.
I suppressed that because I thought, well, I'm a man, I can't show my emotions.
Well, I'm a man, I can't feel this. The girls kind of like, I can't feel it because I've got to be the one to be strong and to be... But God, when we do that, when we suppress and when we do that, everything is eventually, I see it like a catalyst. It's like a volcano underneath. It's all bubbling and bubbling. Eventually that volcano is going to explode. It's going to come out of the top. And in terms of a panic attack, in terms of anything. So did you reach a point where within that space, within those days after it all came to the surface and you couldn't hold it in anymore?
Yes, it got to a point where on that first night it happened, I woke up in my sleep having a panic attack.
I'd say, how does anybody sleep a night after that happening? Even anybody, I'm on about anyone that's not had any mental health, how does anybody, that is a big...
Well, I think we all had our different ways of dealing with it. Like, I'm saying them guys said you shouldn't cry, but I think maybe that's their way of dealing with it, to act manly. That might have been their defensive mechanism to be...
we don't know inside what they're thinking. Maybe they're saying that.
Yeah.
So, like, if we say that, then it's going to make me... not kind of show my emotion as well. So actually it could be them trying to cover stuff up for them.
Well, that's what I've come to my awareness as I'm going further in my journey, is that lack of judge, trying
really
not to judge people, because it's different angles of things, and that they might not be arrogant alpha males. They actually might be hurting inside, but they can't portray that because they're embarrassed, or they might have been brought up to be an alpha male, to be tough, and they can't show emotions because their dad would tell them off. You're being a girl, stop crying. His comment might have been out of something else, you know? And I'm trying now to look at things like that in a different perspective, really. Just help myself, you know?
No, it's true. So, like, when that happened, then after what happened in terms of your mental health? Did things go kind of the same as last time? Worse? Like, what happened in terms of stuff that was going on? Like, how did you feel after mentally?
So, I had a panic attack the night it happened, and then... Right. Another one happened in Thailand. So I went to Thailand a week after.
Wow.
And a panic attack happened on a train. I was going to Chiang Mai, if anyone knows, to go elephant trekking.
Wow.
Halfway up towards Chiang Mai from Bangkok, I had a panic attack on the train so bad that they had to stop the train in the middle of the jungle. And I got taken off on a stretcher. And I laugh about the experience because I have to see the funny side of it.
Yeah, do you know
I'm in the jungle on a stretcher, like hysterical kind of panic attack, got put in some tuk-tuk thing, drove off.
See, it's interesting, is it? Because right now, I see you smiling and laughing about it, which is interesting because technically that was even that experience of being on a stretcher in a jungle, having a panic attack is a very intense, traumatic situation. But it's interesting now, I guess you've got maybe a different...
Well, yeah,
isn't that interesting? That
laughter comes from being genuine. If I'm being honest, it may be in the past I've told stories and it's a hired pain, but actually that is quite genuine laughter, like... I do look at experience and think, oh, wow, I've come a long way now. That was quite a funny experience.
Yes, that was happening in the jungle.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm guessing, after, things have changed since, haven't they? Obviously, I know more about your journey than other people, but would you say it's been quite like that, twists and turns? Because I just feel from watching so Billy's on Instagram, I'll drop all this in the link, from looking at Billy's content and what he does, I just feel like this is somebody who has had like an immensely interesting, if you want to say that word, different journey in terms of there's been lots of twists and turns, hasn't there? I think it hasn't been one way or the other. Like, lots has happened, hasn't it? Without, you know.
Yeah, no, lots has happened. Yeah.
Lots has happened. Lots so, has happened. Like, after, when you get back from traveling and you get back home, how did you adjust to life after this traumatic incident happened?
Well, my character completely changed for the next year. And what I mean by that is, and I was totally unaware of my character changing. I just thought, this is me.
Yeah.
I've become arrogant. So, okay. So if people obviously don't know me, so my natural state, really, I'm a worrier. I'm anxious. I've always been like afraid of dying. I'm sensitive. I cry at the drop of a hat. That was what I was like. But coming back from Thailand, I've become arrogant. Totally. I had an attitude. I was alpha male. Like, I was aggressive.
Wasn't you though?
I was carrying weapons in my car. I was looking for confrontation.
So you were going out looking for the trouble almost?
No, I was carrying weapons as if, like, if you know, sometimes you think you're not looking for it, but you're waiting for something to happen and you're kind of the protagonist behind it, really.
So technically then you were then?
Yeah, I was.
So you,
it's interesting because I was.
But you doing that, you weren't thinking that, that's the point. You were doing that, but you weren't thinking I'm going looking for it, but looking back, it's like, actually, you kind of were, weren't you? Which
You reflecting that back 100%. I think I'm lying to myself. I think I was looking for the altercations and fights, yeah.
So why do you think that kind of change in personality happened? Why was that more so to, I need to be a different person because I can't show my emotions after what happened in Australia? Is this, I need to man up? Is this like, what, from what kind of angle do you think this attitude change was coming from?
I don't know. It's difficult. I think there was a form of suppression there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realise it till afterwards, through the awareness after. I wasn't aware at the time. I sucked into something I didn't know was going on.
Yeah.
I'm taking cocaine. I got involved in crime as well. That's how deep it went.
Really?
Because I wasn't scared. And I think an underlying message of all this, really, if I look at the Australia situation and I separated some of the childhood stuff I've been through, there was obviously a suppression of the Australia thing, but I also think that there was a form of where my mum was quite strict as me as a kid.
Okay.
And disciplined. I think there was an act of, I'm gonna be a rebel now. I'm an adult. I don't have to act like, I don't have to listen to my mum telling me off.
That makes sense.
Want to be a rebel. I want to get involved in crime. I want to do naughty things.
Because for such a long time you were told, you don't do that, you don't do that, you don't do that. That is wrong. You can't do it.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's almost like, I say this when sometimes people leave home, they've had a very strict upbringing. It's like a cat being out of a cage. It's like a fellow cat being out of a cage where you just run.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get drunk and have sex and do all this different stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you've had the opposite of that, it's almost like you say, you do want to be like, actually, do you know what? I'm going to rebel and I'm going to do the opposite of what you tell me to do.
Yeah.
So maybe in a bit of a delayed way, that's what happened as well.
I agree, 100%. I think there was a mixture of things going on.
So maybe that stuff wasn't just about the mental health and wasn't about the trauma. That was maybe about the whole, the upbringing and the childhood stuff, because we know, don't we, that I'm sure you're aware that when we look at mental health and what we, how we're feeling, how much of it goes back to childhood, how much of what we do now, how much of how we feel now goes back to childhood relationship with our mum and our dad, the key relationships in our life. I know for me, a lot of the stuff I've dealt with goes back to not having a dad, not having a dad around, and a lot of the issues I've had even in the last few years, I know, this is because of the whole dad situation. I'm at a point now where I recognise it. So I'm like, I'm feeling like this because of that. And I think it helps to recognise that, because you can feel like you're going mad and you can feel like, God, why am I feeling like this? So if you can be like, it's almost like a bit of a puzzle, isn't it? You're like drawing lines. Okay, so I'm feeling like that because that goes to that and that goes to that. That can be, well, to me, that can be useful, because it's like, okay, I'm not totally crazy. Something happened years ago and I see now that this is why I'm like the way I am now, and this isn't forever. I can grow and actually get over this stuff and develop.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, mate, listen, that resonates with me 100%. It's just, it's that awareness, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think awareness can help you create a gap.
It's useful.
It helps you create
a
space between your thought and your feelings.
To me, it is useful.
It helps you to look at it, because then if you're not aware, like you said, well, I'm going crazy. Why am I feeling like this? But if you know, and you go, oh, that's why.
To me, it's not useful, because I'm like, actually, it's peace of mind thinking, okay, Jack, this is because of that stuff. And we've had these experiences before where we know actually you will kind of develop and move past this stuff.
Yes.
And that is very comforting.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like, whoa, why is this happening? What's going on? Having almost like a blueprint of like, this is Jack. This is a little bit why you're like the way you are. A lot of that stuff as well is explored in therapy. So for people who are listening, like, counselling to me was all about getting over stuff and improving. Therapy, from little bits of knowledge that I've got, is more about kind of identifying like why we're experiencing and why we went through what we went through. It's kind of just, therapy can really, because I know one of my family members is in at the moment, therapy can really help you understand the why, because the why is the big one. So, well, why? Yeah. Why is it like why? We can say that for so many different things. Like counselling for me was about, okay, we need to get through this and we need to get better.
Yeah.
Therapy, I know people that have therapy every week. They're not particularly poorly. They're not really suffering, but they have it to go and talk to somebody to understand different things about their personality. So, yeah, I think therapy is really useful. And especially if you're someone who is able to have access to it, I think it's just a very useful tool to speak to somebody.
I think it's also worth mentioning that finding the right therapist is imperative.
Isn't
and that's
that
part
a big
of my story.
One?
I talk about what happened after, but
yeah.
Finding a therapist is, you know, the right therapist, because, you know, there's so many people out there, you know, and it might not even be their fault. They might be a good therapist, but you might not have that connection with them. Mm. And finding that connection when you look at someone, you think, actually, I know this is right for me.
Yeah.
You can tell they're listening to you, they're empathetic.
That's and some, a hard one, though, because I know my sister, it's taken a while to get to one where she's like, this is, you know, it takes a while to get to a therapist where you're like, I click with this person. It's important to have a good click a good natural.
I think it could take you 1 week. It could take you a year.
Yeah.
For me, it took nearly 6 years. But do you know what I mean? We all have a different journey. There's not a set rule with it. It's just about finding someone who you connect with. That's what
True.
I believe. Yeah.
So back home, all this awful stuff happened in terms of personality. So where I would like to really know, what was the crux of all of that in terms of, okay, something is wrong here. We need to get better. Like, when did you get to that? Not like epiphany, but moment where you're like, whoa, I'm poorly. Like, I remember when I got to that point, I was like, I'm poorly, I need to get better.
Yeah.
How did you get to that stage? You're like, oh, something's not right here.
It was, I went to work one day. I was working with my uncle at the time, and I went to work and I started feeling dizzy, feeling faint, like these electrical surges from my body, felt like anxiety. But I didn't know at the time. I was thinking, you know, I have something physically wrong with me.
Yes. So, it's so easy to say that.
It is easy. You don't want to look at the mental side of things sometimes.
Yeah. It's a physical thing, yeah.
I went to the hospital, did tests, went to doctors. It's over a few weeks, had loads of tests.
Let me guess, did it come back clear in terms of physical?
Physical, I was perfectly normal.
See, that makes sense, doesn't it? I wish they could do the same kind of diagnostic stuff mentally, because apart from someone with a notepad asking us questions, there's not much more we can do in that way. It's literally just talking to somebody. So you do wish sometimes someone could just do, like, just go into my brain, do a test, and you can tell me what's going on. But it's not as simple as that, is it?
Well, it's not. And like you said earlier, it's your body's way of signs. Like you said earlier about the drinking and seizures. It's signs to tell you to... Our body tells us things.
I had IBS. Yeah. And for me, I see now that all the stress and the worry was going to my stomach. So I had IBS and it was very painful and very crippling. And that was my body saying, Jack, alarm bells, this is not okay. Because I literally see now, looking back again, that all the worrying I was doing, it was literally going to my stomach. Our body can give us signs all the time, and especially like headaches. I had lots of headaches. Always exhausted. For me, like being exhausted, having headaches and having IBS in my stomach were like the three things that were really physical symptoms. So I suppose those almost like those sensations were almost like phantom maybe kind of pains were... I guess, as probably Louise Hay would say as well, a huge sign that actually up here, something's not okay, it's not right.
If I didn't have that moment then, I was doing so much drugs and drink, I think I probably would end up dead.
It blocks
Seriously.
It out.
I think
Especially the drugs, it'll block it
but
out.
But I think that was, that them signs were saved my life in a way.
Yeah.
I know that was obviously meant to happen for that
it
stuff to come up.
It was meant to happen,
But that saved me. I think that saved me and helped me.
It had to happen to save you.
It had to happen, yeah.
You had to have that moment to save you.
Yeah.
So how did, and obviously this is ongoing, interestingly, the title of this episode is going to be Life After Trauma, which I think is so interesting in today. I always say this, I don't really like to say totally better because it's a journey, isn't it? I have moments where, anxiety comes up. Oh, no, it's not there now. We're never totally better. I think I want to say if you suffer with mental health, once you are always prone to getting it again. But how did you get on a journey to, let's just say, recovery in terms of, well, I see you now. You are a dad, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. India Rose,
I'll touch about this in a little minute. Yeah. Billy has got his own mental health charity group. He's gone on to do lots of different things. How did you get to that point where you were able to even start a mental health charity, where you were able to have a child, have a normal, well, on the outside, what seems like a very successful / normal life? Like, how were you able to get to that point? Because you were totally here and almost rock bottom, weren't you?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a difficult one, really, because like you just mentioned, my journey is still ongoing. It's ups and downs all the way.
But when you look at yourself now, some could say, this person here is a little bit of a like, whoa, look, a before and after. You are someone who went for mental health, but you have got a mental health charity. You have done acting, you've done modelling. So, you know, you have done all these different things since. So that, to many people, would be very inspirational.
It's learning to cope with my triggers. That's the biggest thing for me.
We've all got
different
triggers.
If I put it, for instance, when I first got diagnosed with PTSD, something could have triggered me off during the previous day. So I'd wake up in the morning feeling triggered, but not knowing what was going on. And you said about finding out why. I didn't know what was going on.
No.
So I'd wake up and stay in bed for weeks on end, maybe a month. I'd grow a beard. I wouldn't wash. I wouldn't brush my teeth. That's how bad it was.
Really?
I'd isolate, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want to socialise, become agoraphobic. Now I look at my journey now, I still get triggered. I still wake up in the morning. I still get that voice saying, stay in bed. I can't face the world. But because I've been into therapy, I've learnt coping skills. I've recognised I'm aware of what triggers me. Well, not always.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm aware and I've built up my resilience.
Yes,
and over them years, that resilience has been built to a point where I'm like, no, you will get out of bed and you will do this. You've got to be motivated. You've got to try.
So do you know what I want to ask in relation to that, without going too much off topic? Would you say that you recognise, because this is hard, do you recognise now more what is real and what is fake? Because I try to say that a lot with me in terms of when I'm thinking something, I'm like, Jack, wait a minute. I actually ask myself, Jack, is this real?
Yes.
What you're thinking right now, because back then, I believed every single thing my mind told me. So
yes.
I didn't question it. So that's why I've suffered so much, because I was literally ruled by my mind. Now I'm trying to rule my mind. I'm trying to, you know, be the person in charge of it. So I'm like, Jack, is this real or is it fake? Because actually, this is probably fake. And I try to ask these probing questions to myself a lot now, because years ago, I literally just, if my mind told me this was true, it was true. That was it. I would suffer for it. So would you say you kind of, are you, because you have resilience, are you building up in that way as well? Can you kind of recognise what's real and what's not real?
100%. And I think that's kind of, well, I took part in this retreat before called Penningham Process up in Scotland. It's amazing, seriously. And their message, their slogan was, come home to yourself. And it's stripping you back. They teach you to strip you back.
Literally, come home to
yourself. And coming home to yourself. And I can really hear what you're saying there about what's real or false. Because I get that. My one is judgment.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always, I could sit somewhere. I could be in now and judging people.
Yeah.
I could be judging you in my mind.
Of course.
Happens. But I realize that that's my mind saying things. Yeah. And that's not necessarily me. That's not me. That's not who I really am.
Exactly.
And that I don't want to, you know, and I think it's okay to have them thoughts, have them voices going on.
Do you know why? Because you're a human.
I don't think it's necessarily about trying to suppress them.
No, it's not.
It's about allowing them to say, actually, it's just trying to be aware, you know?
It's about allowing them, but I think it's allowing them and then being like, okay, you can be here, but we're not going to believe you.
No.
We're not going to pay attention. We know that you're here and we know that you're just, I always call it mind bullshit.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, it's mind bullshit again, Jack. Bye. Just let it go out. And if I don't pay attention to it, it will exit quicker. If I start thinking about it, cling on to it, then a story forms, then blah, 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 gets bigger, it's hard. If I just let it go on its merry way out of my mind again, it will do it quicker.
Yeah.
That, though, obviously is a forever learning process.
I agree.
There's,
I think it's forever learning process.
Days where, bloody hell, it can really, things can take over and it's not, guys, you're probably like, you know, is this easy? No, it's not easy, because there's days where it can really take over and it just, your mind just can trick you. So don't think this is me saying all the time, but yeah, it's about being mindful.
That's why I think it's difficult with healing, because
we all
give out our messages, which is cool. We're all different stages of our journey.
Yeah.
And the paradox of healing is that you can say something's okay and not okay, but somebody can say something's okay. It's okay to it's not okay to have these thoughts of judgment. You fight against the thoughts of judgment, and then some people say it's okay, but it's a paradox because it's all okay.
So
you're all different stages of your journey, all trying to learn, you know?
Well, actually, it's all this is a deep one, but it's all okay because our thoughts real. And that's probably another story for a totally different topic, but are thoughts even real? Are our thoughts actually real? Really? That's another one. Like, how much of it's, is any of it actually, what is a thought? What is it? A feeling's real, a thought's real. I know that's a bit far-fetched, but I try to get to that point because I'm like, I can't take this stuff too seriously now.
Yeah.
I can't, because that's how I'm, the way I am. I just try to be very like, Jack is, you know, don't, I try not to get too bogged down into it now. And I suppose that's just come from the whole spirituality side and just trying to remember that you are not your thoughts.
That's right.
I've shared that quote probably 200 times on my Instagram on Mondays for Monday Motivation, because you are not your thoughts. You are not your anxiety. You are not your bipolar. You are not your depression. It can feel like you are, can't it?
Yeah, 100%.
As me and Billy know, it can feel like for me, your PTSD is you, and you are PTSD, and it is you, because it takes over so much. But I just think it is about getting to a healing point.
healing does not mean finished. As Billy just said, healing does not mean end of story. Healing does not mean we're never going to be poorly again. It's just about having more awareness and knowledge of your emotions and thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, 100%.
Is that kind of a good...
No, it really is. I think that it's, like I said, I think we'll go through these different stages of healing. And I think when you become more aware on your journey, you start becoming aware of other people. So
yeah,
you start to look at them and you think, actually, I can see where they're on their journey.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, sometimes a bit of guidance can help people. And I've noticed stages where I've got to a stage of perfectionism where I thought, I've made it. I'm fully healed. I'd wake up, have a good day and think, this is it. I'm healed. I'm fully healed. But the next day, what hits me? A bad day. Not a bad day, but a day where I'm feeling down and everything's attacking me. And then I'm thinking to myself, and that makes me not want to show my face to the world because...
What, you mean because you're real?
Well, because I've gone from up here, next day to going completely down to the rock bottom because I'm not living in that flow of actually accepting that bad and good days are part of the process.
So really, though, again, doesn't that literally just make you a human being on planet Earth? And what I want to say in relation to that, we can pressure ourselves a lot. So where you said that then, I think it's just about realising that, okay, there's going to be good days, there's going to be bad days, there's going to be amazing days, there's going to be really dark days. It's just about recognising that we don't actually need to put pressure on us to be okay.
Yeah.
It's about getting up in the morning and saying, okay, I'm here, I'm going to have my day. If it's not an amazing day, actually, do you know what? That's all right.
Yeah.
That's okay. Because we shouldn't beat ourselves up and sweat the small stuff in that way. Because that, for me, used to be such a big thing. Everything had to be perfect. And I had to look perfect. I had to dress perfect. Every single thing. This is a different topic. But everything had to be a certain way. And now, I just want it to be how it is.
Do you ever have days when you still have it, though? Like, so you go for a period of feeling really good. Or you're okay with everything. But then that one day comes back and you're like, wow, like you're still there. You're still trying,
like,
you know.
And I'm like, again... And when that happens, I remind myself, yet again, yes, Jack, this will happen because it's a journey.
Yes.
And on a journey, in a car, we have exits, we have entrances, we go on roundabouts, we go on motorways. This is a journey. It's never going to end. So you've got to take the rough with the smooth. And what I'd always say is, there might be lots of rough, bumpy road. Soon, again, the smooth surface will appear. And it might be a while, it might be not very long. But it does, doesn't it? It does, like... With you, I'm sure, and I can say, in the worst of symptoms, you do think, this is forever, I'm never going to get better, it's never going to improve. You've improved.
Yeah.
I've improved. Lots of other people have improved, so you do. And it's almost like, now you're saying to me, in a way, actually, I don't really know how it happened, but you did, didn't you? You're here, I don't know, but you did.
Well, it's weird, seeing how far I've come, and I went and seen my therapist last week, and it's nice to get that reflection back from him, even though sometimes I start answering my own questions these days because I've got a lot of awareness about what's going on for me. But he's told me something quite profound, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, maybe there's a hint of me experiencing this, and that's that, you know, when we have these thoughts going on, obviously, and when you start to learn your journey and you become separate from them thoughts, you can have periods where your mind's empty and quiet.
Yeah.
And he said to me, sometimes people can become afraid of that emptiness. So they go back into the trauma. Because trauma sometimes can be addicted being in that situation. Does that make sense?
It's almost like you're seeking it out then.
Well, like you said about, you know, like labelling.
Yeah.
You can become addicted to that label of having PTSD. And before you know it, you're being sucked into it. And I can sit here and go, well, actually, I'm still the same as I was 8 years ago. But really, I'm not.
But you're not.
And then...
You're not, though.
And then, as you said, sometimes you get uncomfortable with healing because it's all you know. So you go back to hiding under your bed covers. You want to go back into your shell because it's safer to be there.
Because that feeling is almost safer because you've got used to it. And that makes sense as well.
Yeah.
Because it's like that for everything. That is almost like, in a really messed up, not okay way, it's like, that is my safe space. Even though it's a very negative one, it's one that we sometimes can grow accustomed to, can't it?
100%.
So that's another one, which is interesting all in itself. Guys, we've been talking for an hour, which is amazing. Has that gone quick?
Yeah.
I want to really ask you just a few things before we kind of wrap up. Tell us about your charity support group, company. It's all kinds of names. Tell us about that and how you founded it.
Yeah, literally, I was on, obviously, I've spoke to you about my journey with trauma and things, and I just started building up confidence going along in my journey that, you know, you get to a point you think, I want to become empowered. And how can I become empowered? What can I do to feel that way?
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I feel like I started off an Instagram page. Warriors Stand United Twitter page of raising awareness for trauma. I named it Warriors Stand United. And that's what it was. It was just a page just putting quotes up, you know, like we all do to try and heal. I'm an extrovert, so I like doing things like that. So I was posting quotes, etc.
Love a quote.
And then I always edit my mindset. I got inspired by a few people actually, and I kind of decided that I wanted to start up my own support group and in my local area for men. So I've started it up, and it's now it's been going for over a year now. So
wow.
Yeah.
So is that a group that, so what happens in this group then? Is this a group where men can come and talk about anything? Is it
it's very open.
Is it just for mental health? Is it for just men who want to talk about their feelings? Is it kind of very...
There's no really limit. So even if you're having a tough week and you thought this group's on and I want to come and talk to a few guys, then just come and talk. Because, you know, some people don't realise they have mental health issues.
Yeah.
So they don't know. So it's like, oh, I've got this thing going on. And I've had guys say to me before, you know, I didn't know what was going on for me. I didn't know I had mental health. I just felt funny, like myself. I thought I had physical problems, going to have tests, etc.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to offer that support for people. Because, Joe, the thing is, Jack, doing that, I'm realising that they're helping me heal as well. Or they're helping me in my journey.
I agree with that.
We're giving back to each other.
I agree.
So it's amazing. You know?
I agree with the survivor. I was saying this to somebody earlier that I love doing these talks on my Instagram stuff, my YouTube, but actually doing it's helping me. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So like doing these talks after, I'm like, oh, I feel motivated now. Sharing this stuff motivates me. So yes, I'm motivated and want to help other people. But for me, I know I've found something good here because actually it works for me as well.
Yeah.
So it gives me that feeling. So yeah, I like that. So for you as well, it must make you, it helps you as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, it's empowering, you know.
That sounds really like positive because, again, we don't look at it. And people say this to me, we don't see it like this, but you are someone who went through very bad mental health and a very bad time. You have started to turn it around and you're now somebody who's got your own support group for mental health. That's amazing.
No, it really is.
It's a big thing, isn't it?
Thank you.
You're so proud. That's
Thank
amazing.
You very much.
And, you know, just tell us in general, you're a dad. What's that? You're a dad. Do you know, like years ago, did you ever imagine when you're in those times that you'd have a child?
I never thought, no. Everyone says that. Everyone
You've
says
got
that.
A child.
Yes, I know.
Fantastic.
I know. It's unreal. It's changed my life.
The next generation.
Oh,
that's amazing.
And it's amazing because, you know, I know I'm not going to be a perfect dad because that's impossible.
Nobody's
But having a baby when I've had and being able to go through my journey and learn things about generational trauma and how it's been passed down because I was a sensitive kid and I picked up on my mum's traumas traumas. And
generational
is real. And I've kind of now got to that point where I've had my child at this time in my life because I think it was the right time. So I hopefully won't pass on the kind of generational pain of witnessing domestic violence and seeing bad stuff like I did as a kid because I'm more aware to not bring her up in that kind of environment and not to suffocate her like my mum did in a way and prevent me from doing stuff.
Yeah.
I want to bring her up to be independent and aware of her own motions.
Well, because as well, I suppose it will be useful because you are aware of that stuff now. So it's like you can ensure that this child of yours is going to have a totally different experience.
Yeah.
And that's amazing because you have that knowledge, you're going to make that happen and that's very positive. And it's only because you've recognised it in the generational stuff. So that's fantastic. That's really good. Finally, I just want to quickly ask, because I love asking this. Social media, you have a big platform. I always ask, do you find social media useful in your mental health journey? That's what I'd love to ask you as a nice kind of overall question. Do you find your platform, social media in general, do you find it useful for you in your healing, your journey? And yeah.
I think it depends how I use it. Because I'm still, as I said, as we've both been speaking about, journeys are imperfect. So
yeah.
I find it helpful on days when I want to go on there. And when I post some stuff that's, you know, real honest and raw and make videos and that on days when I'm really struggling, they really help. But sometimes I still get sucked back into that of having to keep up the appearances. So posting for the sake of it, I still do that, you know.
And but we've got to do it naturally, right?
I agree 100%. I feel like when you put a natural post, I feel like it hits people more.
Because I always do this now. So like on my business Motivated Boy page, I said, oh, I'm going to post 5 days a week. Now, I normally get to like today, and tomorrow I'm like, actually, I'm only going to post if it's natural. So I'm not going to post today. I'm not going to post tomorrow because it's not a natural thing. I'll see on the next day.
Yeah.
I understand that people have to do things for businesses, but for me, I'm like, God, Jack, you've got to keep this natural and organic because I think people can tell if it's not really there.
Mate, you just gives me goosebumps because it's true what you just said about people.
Do you know what I mean?
I think people can tell because I can sometimes see people do it. And
like
I don't.
If I wake up in the morning, I'm like, should we do Motivated Boy stuff today? We're not going to do it this morning because this morning, I thought, no, we're not going to. It's not organic. Wait till tomorrow. We'll see again. I've got 100%. To do it like that because then it's going to start. Then it becomes a choice. Like, no, I want this to be just organic.
And there's no judgment on people who do that because I said,
I
do it myself.
Do it.
Yeah, I do it myself.
Only
because
because they have literally got that expectation. But
yeah.
I feel like it's important to be careful and just kind of manage your own expectations of how you're using it because that's important, isn't it?
And I think I've realised that there's a little bit of a responsibility on me to if I'm putting that post about mental health and it's going out to a wider platform, I do feel like there's a responsibility that youngsters might see that.
Yeah.
So I want to be honest and you know, and not portray kind of fakeness, really.
Authentic all the way below.
Authenticity, yes, mate.
Wow. Okay. That is a really lovely place to wrap up, isn't it? Wow. Okay. Guys, that was deep. It was heavy, but how inspirational was that? Like, Billy, have you got any final comments you want to make to people listening? Is there anything you want to say?
I just want to say this, that, you know, you listen to my story and you don't have to be, along your journey, you don't have to be measured by becoming a speaker or having your own group.
You don't have to have your own platform or anything.
For you, it could be just going for a walk, and that could be your biggest achievement, you know, going out for a walk because you've been agoraphobic for a year.
And that, guys, is totally enough.
And it's just saying that you can kind of get to a place where you can live beside your demons. You don't have to, you know, you can't run away from them completely, but you can learn to live beside them, and that's my final thought, really.
Billy, I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for joining me. Guys, it's been such a pleasure. I hope you have a nice January. It's 2020, new year. Let's smash it. Let's do it. Guys, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you guys soon. Bye, guys.